Welcome back to the Rodcast. It is a One Artist Wednesday edition of the Rodcast. That's when my co-host, Patrick Davis, the Idealionaire on the show, plays jams from one specific artist group or band. He goes deep down the rabbit hole into the catalog of one specific group, artist, or band, and they become the featured artist of One Artist Wednesday. And today's featured artist is The Cult, and also has a little bit of a hidden meaning, a hidden message, or a jab, if you will, at the Aggies. A lot of Longhorn fans refer to the Longhorn, the Aggie faithful, as The Cult, and will be facing the Aggies this upcoming holiday weekend, rekindling the Texas A&M rivalry. So I think my man Patrick is taking a little shot at the Aggies there with the Cult reference on One Artist Wednesday. So we appreciate that. We also appreciate him coming up with the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day, which is posted at the Horn ATX account on X. You can go check it out for yourself and go vote. Patrick, what is the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day?
Big Fat Poll today: who will be the MVP for Texas against A&M? We gave you a couple options. Right now, Anthony Hill is winning with 46%, 31% for Quinn Ewers, 16% for Trey Wisner, and 7% for Jahdae Barron. So you can vote there. If you have another name, feel free to throw that in there on X, or you can throw it on the text line, 512-447-3776. And also, if you haven't thrown in yet, the player or moment or the thing you think of most when you think of the rivalry between Texas and Texas A&M. We've had a lot of Case McCoys on there, a lot of Tuckers on there, a lot of Rickies on there. So let me know. I'm trying to see. I don't know if there's – I don't have the lineage back far enough to say if there's some back in the day that are iconic moments.
Yeah, like I said, my knowledge, it pretty much starts with Ricky and epic Mount run. Brian. And I did, mine, I don't go back much further than that with Texas Tech A&M. And, you know, except I wasn't a huge fan of Texas until I started kind of being recruited by Texas. And then I became a big fan of Texas. So I wasn't necessarily following the program back then. And, you know, that's kind of the issue with the young guys or the younger generation now. They're not going to have any roots or connection with this rivalry. It's going to take about 5 years to start building the foundation again and the rivalry to get some roots and these guys to have more of a sentimental connection with the rivalry. They don't get what the rivalry's about, and why should they?
No,
they ain't been around in 13 years.
This year will help a little bit because it's going to be huge implications for both teams. And, I mean, it's a little bit less for Texas now that we think they can get in either way. But at the same part, this is for both of them to get into the SEC championship. So there's that going into it. It's going to be insanely loud.
It's going to be crazy.
So I think there's going to be, for the guys who go this year, they will have a good barometer of what this means going forward. And I'm sure every one of these guys who's got an NIL deal and has to talk to any booster or donor, those guys are letting them know the importance of this rivalry.
Oh, no doubt about it. Yeah, no, behind. I mean, there's a lot that's gone down, you know, in those 13 years and during the Texas Cold War era, as I like to call it, that really will be they'll be exercising those demons, if you will, on Saturday night. A lot of Aggie fans will. All right, we got my man Nick Shuley coming up with Setlist ATX. Let's not waste any time. Let's get right to him. So let's hit our horn headlines first. We'll get educated, updated, and informed with all the top stories of the day. Then we'll come back and get into the Setlist ATX with my man Nick Shuley. But first, the horn headlines with my man Patrick Davis.
All right, your horn headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. In the NBA, the Rockets beat the Timberwolves 117-111 last night, pushing their cup play record to 3-0. Fred VanVleet had 27 points and 11 assists, and Alperen Şengün added a triple-double. The Spurs won their fourth straight 128-115 over the Jazz, with Victor Wembanyama putting up 34 points in the game. Tonight, the Spurs are back in action against the Lakers. The Mavericks welcome Jalen Brunson and the Knicks, and the Rockets take on the struggling 76ers. In college basketball, number one Kansas held on to a 75-72 lead to hand Duke their second loss of the season. And unranked Colorado handed number two UConn their second straight loss in a row, 73-72. And number 20 Texas A&M lost their second game of the season to an unranked Oregon, 80-70. In college football, the latest playoff rankings were released, with Texas remaining at number 3. Indiana dropped to number 10, and Arizona State now sneaks in as the final team. Clemson, Alabama, and Ole Miss are all on the outside looking in at 12, 13, and 14, respectively. And that is your horn headlines.
All right, thank you, Patrick, for the Horn headlines. We appreciate those. Time to get to Setlist ATX with the man, Nick Shuley. Nick, how you doing, brother? Appreciate the time, as always.
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me.
For those who don't know, Nick Shuley is also a part of the crew, the Third and Longhorn crew, with myself, Nick Shuley, Jeremy Hills, and Fozzie Whitaker, Derek Johnson, Alex Okafor, a part of that crew. We have a great time, and we just did our Aggie preview. We'll get that posted for you. But for the folks out there who have not heard Third and Longhorn and they want to track down the podcast, where can they find the Third and Longhorn podcast, Nick?
Yeah, just go to thirdandlonghorn.com. So THIRD and Longhorn. Or 3RD in Longhorn, and you can get it there. It's on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, anywhere you get your, nice. Your podcasts and shows.
I like it. All right, let me ask you about the Aggie game. My man Patrick threw out a couple of questions. I like the one that he threw out for the text line. Is there a player that you, as long as you've been watching Texas A&M, is there a player that you associate with an iconic moment watching the game that stands out to you?
And I mean, obviously the Ricky run. Like I remember, yeah. I was a senior in high school, and my brother and his like a roommate had like camped out to get tickets to that game because they were at UT at the time, and so I got to go. Like he got tickets, I got to go stay the night in the dorm, and I thought that was so cool to stay in Jester, you know, which, you know, later on living in Jester, you realize how uncool that is. But it was pretty cool, man. And they got front row seats. So we were in that corner of the end zone, what would be, I think, the southeast end zone. So right where Ricky actually scored. If they would, like, when he scores, if they'd pan the camera up a little, we were right there. So
That's cool.
It was pretty special.
That's
to
awesome.
See. And so obviously that, I mean, I'm old and have been watching this since I can remember walking. So I remember the years of like Aggie domination, which were, late, early 90s when you had like Corey Pollig and Bucky Richardson and these guys, and they just beat the snot out of us every single year.
The Wrecking Crew still there.
Yeah,
man.
They were solid. I do remember, obviously, there's so many Texas guys that you remember that Case McCoy moment. You know, there were so many big moments. I remember the game at A&M where the national championship year where we kind of didn't really show up most of the game, and it was one of those where it started to get a little hairy, and I'd gone to that with my sister who was at A&M at the time, and I was stressing a little sitting in my orange shirt in the maroon student section, and dude, man, it was funny, they'd grab me in that stupid sway, and I'd be trying to like hold my arms out to not, yeah, I'm like, don't touch me, I don't want this. But yeah, man, pretty it's a pretty special rivalry. This one's gonna be, I mean, I'm sure I'm like y'all. I sit on my hands during these games. I'm a little nervous, you know, watching them. And this one's going to be times 100, I think. So it should be cool. It'll be fun.
Yeah. I just want Texas to get off to a good start.
That's the key, man. That's this team. Yeah. If they get off to a good start, and by the way, before we get off here, and you're talking about Trey Wisner, man, I am going to do everything I can to get him. Tell me what you think about this. A minivan deal, but hold up. Like, a really – no. It's on the outside, you know, everything. It just looks like a minivan. It's super reliable, whatever. But on the inside, we, like, trick this thing out, man. Like, it is, the sickest van you've ever
you're
seen.
You're
going
to get exhibit?
What's that?
Exhibit?
Oh yeah, 100%. We're gonna pick that ride, dude. Because that, I mean, that's Trey, right? He's not flashy, whatever. But you know, then you watch and you're like, oh dang, kid gets after us. So we need to get him a solid, like, you know, Astro van, Dodge. I don't even know or whatever.
We got you an aquarium and a PS2, man.
I'm gonna work on it. Great. I'm gonna take it to Trey, and Trey's gonna be like, nah, man, I'm good.
No, I love that idea. Just because when you look at Trey, he is unassuming. You go, he's. Now, again, it's nothing elite or specialist early of autumn, but it is the really the intrinsic
there's a lot
value
of
what Trey Wise, the toughness, the work at the trust factor. It's a lot of things. I'm not saying that he's a scrub physically. No, not at all. Because the guy's an elite athlete. That's why he's here at Texas. But it is what we are finding now, that the added value of Trey Wise is the intangible, the immeasurable. Right, because that's why he wasn't ahead of C.J. Baxter and Jaden Blue and all those guys. Because Jarrett Gibson, they had these physical tools. So you see them in this, and you go, "Whoa, I see why Jarrett Gibson was recruited. Oh, I see why Jaden Blue was recruited. Whoa, I see why they got C.J. Baxter." You don't say that initially when you see Trey Wiseman. You got to watch him a little while.
Yeah,
you gotta watch him a little while. You got to get to know him.
And then you look at his stat line, and you're like, "Oh wow, he dominated that game." And that's
and you go,
him.
Patience, vision. sure, you know what I mean, ball security. You go, damn, these are all the things that I need. Pass protection. These are all the things that I really need, and that's a minivan can do that to you. At first, it seems like, I'm not impressed by this minivan, and then you drive it around a little bit and go, this minivan has everything
solid,
I need.
Yeah. It's solid. The pickup's not what I wanted, but other than that, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah, I can't pick up hot chicks in it, but you know what? That's not what I need right now, all right? What I need is to get to point A to point B with no issues, and Trey Wiser can do that for you.
Man, it is fascinating how many – running backs you need now to survive a college football season, especially the SEC. Like, look at, I mean, the A&M's in the same situation we are.
They
like
are.
All these programs, they got like three guys, and I think that's going to be the future of college football. Is like, you just got, it's just like the NFL, right? You don't have your workhorse anymore. You got like three guys that are going to get after it.
And strangely enough, that's coming back in the league now. The workhorse thing is coming back a little bit.
That
with
is crazy.
Saquon Barkley and Derrick Henry. It's like the same. That's like, and Joe Mixon has had some workload.
Josh Jacobs
like that.
Been doing it.
Yeah, Jacobs too.
It's like, so. Everything's full circle. Everything just—it's just a cyclical thing.
Yeah,
it's football's like that. Like fashion, maybe music. Is music like that? Is music cyclical?
Yeah.
Because a lot of things in our life are, or at least in terms of the art forms, it's cyclical. They
go. '90s rock is back now. So like it's like '90s garage rock. I never thought it'd even have its first moment, but it's got its second now. So
there you go. Exactly. That's how you know you get old, when you see the cycle and you recognize it. Go, hey, that's the same fashion I had 20
years
ago.
Those pants. Those were terrible.
That's how you know, like, damn, I'm old.
Yep.
I'm living too old. Multiple cycles. All right, let's get to set list ATX, because I know my man Nick is busy. He's got things to do. So let's start with Wednesday, as we always do, with a set list ATX.
Yeah, we're pretty light today. Obviously, the holiday week weekend, the touring kind of goes down, but there's some cool stuff going on. So tonight, the second night of Casey Musgraves will be playing at the Moody Center with Lord Huron and Nickel Creek. I heard that show last night. It was fantastic. And then another cool one, if you're a local music fan or just like good songwriter, Slade Cleaves will be playing at Saxon Pub, and he's fantastic. And then Thursday, it's a little Thanksgiving tradition. The Saxon Pub does their Thanksgiving with Patrice Pike, so she'll be over there. Something to do after, you know, go eat. If you're not sleeping on the couch or, you know, sleeping through the Cowboys game, you can go go over there. And then on Friday, Bob Schneider and the Moonlight Orchestra are doing a special holiday show at ACL Live. And then one of Austin's best acts, Wild Child, will be doing their Wild Child and Friends Night 1 at Scoot Inn. And out in Cedar Park, Kevin Fowler will be playing the Hot Spot. So a bunch of stuff going on Friday night. And then Saturday is the second night of Wild Child and Friends at Scoot. And then one of Austin's best songwriters, David Ramirez, will be at the Paramount. And then a big one, a big show over at Emo's, obviously, especially for us Texas fans. Big X the Plug, who we always hear his song every time there's a Texas game on.
Seriously.
You know it even if you don't know him. So he'll be over at Emo's. And then the Peterson Brothers will be doing a cool post-Thanksgiving bash over at the Continental Club. And then multi-platinum country artist Chase Rice will be out at the Hot Spot in Cedar Park on Saturday night. And then Sunday, a big-time country artist, kind of dance hall artist, Aaron Watson, will be doing a little dance hall tour at Green Hall. And then Monday, Austin legend Dale Watson will be at the Continental Club. And Tuesday, shock trap rap rapper Cupcake will be at Antone's, which I actually randomly DJ'd for her at a show because an artist I was working with opened, and I was her DJ, and it was all my friends were there taking pictures because you'll have to Google Cupcake, and she raps about things that you can't talk about on the radio.
It ain't Cupcake rap then.
No, it makes like Cardi B and Nicki Minaj look like G-rated.
Oh.
Like it is like, and so I'm up there DJing, and my friends are just having the time of their life, and like, I mean, I wasn't really like, for her, she's just needed somebody to trigger tracks on stage, so I'm just fake DJing the whole time and just like hitting it and just like vibing to
so
the
when
song.
You fake DJ, do you have to like, are you really acting a role, are you like,
yeah, you have to vibe, you have to act like,
and
yeah, you have to act like you're into it and stuff. It's pretty funny, man.
Holding your headphones like, I got this.
My friends used to, when I did it, my friends would call me DJ Press Play, because when I was in college I would like actually DJ off vinyl and turntables, you know. And then
yeah, that's hard work right there.
Yeah,
that's hard work.
It is, it takes a lot. But then as you get older, you're just like, yeah, I don't, this is is all a show anyway. So I would just be half, you know, just triggering stuff, just pretending to press buttons and stuff. So I love watching DJs on stage. You're like, I know what you're doing.
Because you know they're faking it, right? You know they're just like,
they're working way too hard. You don't hear any of it.
Yeah. Oh, dude, we like, had.
What do you think that button does? What do you think that spinning? I can't hear it, so it's not doing anything.
We were out with at Warped Tour with this. I think it was called Big Chocolate. He was like the biggest DJ in the Warped Tour, and he was so funny. He was like the coolest guy, and we were on the Warped Tour, so you're there every night, so we all got to be friends. And he's on stage like rocking out. There's like 40,000 people there. He's killing it. And like he turns to us on the side of the stage and he's like, "This isn't plugged in." and he's just like pushing stuff. He's like, "I'm not doing anything." And everybody's going crazy. Dude made like, you know, 20 grand that night too. So
that is awesome.
Yeah, he was
at
so
least he's
funny.
Able to be self-deprecating. Oh, yeah. At least
he's like, "Dude, it's the Warped Tour." He's like, I'm just playing the same set every night." So he was a super cool guy.
That is awesome. I love that. Okay, before we let you go, Nick, a shout out to Fancy Boots. I sent this to you guys because she's listening at Texas Fancy Boots. We love Megan. She's great. She's fantastic. She was listening to our conversation and your suggestion about Trey Wisner, at least my rant that he needs a NIL deal with some type of car company, especially if Jared Gibson can get a Maserati deal. And you said you should get him a tricked out van. She found one. She actually posted it. Texas Fancy Boots found you a tricked out. I don't even know what this is. What kind of van is this? Is it a Toyota? It's a tricked out Toyota Hiace 2025 luxury edition. I have no idea.
It is. You gotta find a driver for this one though.
You're so far past my minivan knowledge right now.
Yeah. No. Wow. I mean, I'm just looking at the video.
This thing is amazing.
Looking at the video of this right now, that is, it's amazing. But you got to get a driver because you can't enjoy any of that from the front seat.
Trey Wisner, if you run for 150 on the Aggies, we will get you a driver.
Dude, he deserves a driver. Man, if he wins that game against MVP, like somebody's going to get him a driver and that sick van, and he deserves it.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. 150 on the Aggies, you'll get a driver.
Hey, no more parking tickets. Sir, circle the block.
Yeah.
I'll be back after practice.
Dude, that's better than any NIL deal for a car. You get somebody, a driver, who takes them around like a chauffeur. That's like the ultimate, you know, G'd up. That's when you've made it.
I agree.
It's cool to have a cool car, but you got somebody driving you around.
Yeah. Okay, here's the question. So would you take the Quinn Ewers private jet deal or have your own driver with your own car deal? Which one is better? Because you don't use a jet. You're only going to use a jet like twice a year. And during football season, you can't use the jet.
Yeah.
Because you can't really go anywhere. Maybe you can go somewhere. But the private driver, you'll use that every day, all day.
Dude, those deals are – those plane deals are like, you know, six round trips or something usually. It's not – you know what I mean?
So you don't have access.
I would take the driver any day. Yeah. I mean, every single day. Could you imagine just waking up, somebody picks you up, takes you to work or, you know, drops you off. You're like, hey, man, I'm hungry. Well, you mind rolling me through McDonald's?
You can't, dude. Just when you're hungover and you're like,
oh my gosh.
When you're hungover and you're like, all right, I'm going to get in the back of my tinted windows and take me to Jack in the Box, please.
This is the ultimate.
You would be the most popular guy on 6th Street when everybody's got to leave and you already got your driver. You can take all the women with you. Ladies, who wants a ride home? Let's go.
Man, this is the ultimate NIL, dude. I really think we're onto something. It's like, you know, everybody just be like, we need, let's call Trey, man, because he'll pick us up.
And you know who should do it first? Georgia. Georgia, you need this deal. Georgia, what the hell's going on? You need private drivers for all these guys. You should start it out, man.
Dude, how has that not happened yet with them? I mean, some company that does like a chauffeur service in Athens for like, you know, for students, that would be the – like, oh my gosh, that's such a miss.
Yeah, why aren't we having – why isn't there a chauffeur service that has NIL deal? Because you can do this in every college town then.
Dude.
You know what I mean? You got the cars already. Just get the car and you get the driver and then boom.
Yeah.
Ooh. Luxury living.
We're on something.
We're on to something. Hey, Nick, thank you for everything. Hey, happy Thanksgiving too, brother.
Y'all
I'll talk
too.
To you.
Yeah, you guys be safe.
Make sure you check out the Third and Longhorns, the Aggie preview, because it's great. There's a great story worked by Jay Hills talking about that Case McCoy run.
It is
really good. And you guys are going to do the post game as well, correct?
Yeah. We'll be there after. And I think DJ and Oak and Hills are all coming, so it'll be fun. Man. Maybe AJ Williams. So
And how do people get to the post game?
Same thing. Just go to Third and Longhorn. It'll redirect you to the YouTube. It's on YouTube, Twitter, all the everything.
There you go. That's why he's the man, Nick Shuley. Thanks, Nick, for everything, brother.
Thank you, guys. Y'all have a happy Thanksgiving.
All right, that is Nick Shuley hooking us up with Setlist ATX and giving us a great idea for an NIL endorsement for Trey Wisner. Thank you, Fancy Boots. We appreciate you, Megan, as always. You are one of our favorites out there. Okay, let's get to the break. We get to the break, we'll just make it a smorgasbord next segment. We're going to talk Cowboys. We'll throw some Texans in there, and I'll give you the rest of my Aggie preview here before we end the show for this holiday season edition of the Rodcast. All of that and more right here on the Rodcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Find out what happens when people stop being polite and start getting real.
You ain't keeping it real.
My God, okay, it's happening. Everybody stay calm.
No, you've got it now. It's time for Rod's Rant of the Day.
Hold on to your butts.
All right, welcome back to the Rodcast. Time to get into we'll get into a couple other things. I want to talk a little Cowboys, a little Texans, and also talk about the Aggies a little bit. So let's start off talking about the Aggies. I'll give you some more nuggets about this matchup. I also think that going up against that Texas or going up against the Texas A&M defense, I think for the Texas offense, if Quinn Ewers' ankle isn't something that is truly hindering him from driving the football downfield. I'm assuming mild ankle sprain, you know, not something if, especially if he's gotten treatment all week long, not something that should be, you know, shouldn't be very debilitating, if you will. But we don't know really the severity of it, and it could get re-injured in that game. But I'm assuming right now Quinn's going to be ready to go. You better have a contingency plan, though. You better have a contingency plan for Arch Manning in that game. He should be taking some first-team reps this week, no doubt. But the last two SEC games were really what I've been paying attention to, because at this point in the season, the advantage is we know who these teams are. I mean, we're 11 games in. You got enough of a sample size to know exactly who these teams are. You know, so you don't need to go back to when Connor Wigman was the starting quarterback early on in the season. No, I just kind of take the sample size from the games they've played lately against SEC opponents. They'll give you a real good sample of a kind of a deep sample of what this team's all about. And where they're trending, unfortunately. Now, Texas, I think, is trending in a lot of areas. I think they're trending in the right direction. They're trending up. The run game, it had one of its best games, if not its best game. So they're trending up. The defense is still playing at a really, really high level. So I think the defense is continuing to trend up, in my opinion. There are some aspects of the Aggies' formula to win that's trending down, going the other direction. And I talked about the rush defense. Rush defense is the thing that stands out as something that is in decline for the Aggies. If you go look at rushing yards allowed in the last 3 weeks, they're 101st in rushing yards allowed in the last 3 weeks. They usually allow 123 rushing yards. Last 3 weeks, they've been allowing an average of 192 rushing yards. The last 3 weeks, you look at yards per rush allowed, they're at 4.7. Usually they're at 3.8. Rushing defense is in decline, it would seem like, for the Aggies. I brought this up earlier. You go look at that, the Auburn game. You go look at the South Carolina game, excuse me. I mean, they were gashed by, this is Trey Wisner should be looking at this thinking, hey, I got a shot to get some, all right, to get some big plays in this game versus the Aggies. Jarquez Hunter, who's one of the better running backs in the SEC, and that game went to four overtimes, but he had 130 yards rushing, over 4.5 yards per rush. If you go look at the game versus South Carolina, you know, Raheem Sanders averaged over 7 yards per rush. And he had 20 rushes. They had another running back, averaged 4.5 yards per rush. Raheem Sanders had 144 yards. They actually had 200-yard rushers because Lenora Sellers, the quarterback, rushed for over 100 yards too. But Texas doesn't have a +1 in the running game like that. And that also may be a reason that they got a boost in the running game with a +1, which Auburn also has with Peyton Thorne as a +1 in the running game. But it's a good sign for Texas that they're coming off their best performance run blocking on the O-line, being able to impose their will in the running game, and you have the Aggies run defense that looks like, I said, is somewhat in decline. Now, Auburn was on the road, so, you know, talking about on the road versus at home, those are very different teams, right? At South Carolina, at Auburn. So at home, I expect the Aggies to have a better rush defense. But I'm just talking about the last two SEC games. We've seen their rush defense look, you know, subpar. And Texas rush offense looking like it's starting to find its groove. So that's one thing to look at. But then in addition to that, their pass defense has allowed a lot of deep, explosive pass plays via the passing game in the last two games. Now, that's on the road. Like I said, this won't be at home. So it's a little different on the road with South Carolina, on the road with Auburn. But look at the wide receivers, too. Here are the wide receivers who had big games versus in the last two SEC title games, two last SEC games, I should say. Here are the wide receivers that had big games. If you go look at Joshua Simon for South Carolina, he had four receptions for 132 yards. All right, that was a lot of big plays thrown there. You only got four receptions, you end up with 130 yards. Those are big chunk yardage plays. Raheem Sanders was the running back I was telling you about, who had over 7 yards per rush. But hell, he had 92 yards receiving on five receptions. Chunk yardage plays. Big chunk yardage plays. Obviously not downfield with the running back, but it shows you can either be getting chunk yardage plays down the field from your wide receivers, or these can be yak opportunities where running backs catch the ball in space. We know Sark's offense, top five yak offense in the Power Four. It's also built to get running backs in space like Trey Wisner and Jaden Blue, and built to get wide receivers in space and force you to make open field tackles with plenty of space around. Right? That's what Sark does really well. That's something that the Aggies have been struggling with on defense in the last couple of games. Go look at the Auburn game. In the Auburn game, you go look at that group. They had, man, look at the wide receiver talent. They had two wide receivers that ended up being 100-yard receivers. They had Cam Coleman, who's a monster. His catch point and catch radius aggression is off the charts. So he has seven receptions, 128 yards, and two touchdowns. He was a beast in the red zone. And if you go look at the other receiver, Kendre Lambert Smith, he had two receptions, but for 104 yards. Chunk yardage plays. So either they're getting them with lots of yak yards, or they're getting them by getting over the top and getting behind the Aggie secondary. Either way, that's good for Texas. Now, Quinn's got to be able to get it there. That's important. But you go look at that South Carolina game, you go look at the deep passes. So these are passes of 20 yards or more. So the Texas A&M defense and how many passes they allowed in the last two SEC games, passes they allowed of 20-plus yards. Peyton Thorne was 5 of 8, and Sellers was 2 of 3 on those deep passes down the field. So 7 of 11. So you're talking about the last two SEC title games, two SEC games, you have allowed a over 63% completion percentage on passes of 20 yards or more down the field. 248 yards on those 11 pass attempts, and three touchdowns you've allowed in the last two SEC games, defending passes of 20-plus yards. So you're averaging 22.5 yards per attempt allowed in the last two SEC title games on passes of 20-plus yards. So they're starting to, right now, starting to see some leaky coverage. I think it's the eyes from what I saw watching film on them. Their eyes are not always in a great place as defensive backs. They got really undisciplined eyes at times, and that leads to guys just getting lost in coverage behind them. That can happen. And some of these other guys have been scramble drills or them extending the play. We saw Quinn extend the play. That probably won't happen in this game because I don't know how mobile Quinn's going to be. But they are susceptible to the deep ball. And they seem like they've been more susceptible to the deep ball lately than they were earlier in the year. Like, you go look at the LSU game. LSU didn't do them like that. And so maybe it's something about being at home as opposed to being on the road. So maybe at home, like I said, when you get a team like this, Sark's early teams were like this too, right? They didn't play their best football on the road. They played their best football at home. And then as the team now has started to mature, now Sark hasn't lost a true road game since when? Oklahoma State? So when you start to mature as a good team, this is Mike Elko's first year. First year, they're an immature team, inconsistent, got an inexperienced quarterback. So you get comfort at home, you get erratic, inconsistent play on the road. So I expect them to be better at home is my point. But this is what the defense has been struggling with in the last couple of games. So their rush defense in decline, pass defense has been susceptible to big plays as of late. Jumping on the other side of the ball, I think the matchup to watch, and we talked about this too, the matchup to watch for Texas versus the Aggies is, you know, how do they corral Marcel Reed? Like, that's really the question. And, you know, for Texas, when the play breaks down and then Marcel Reed becomes a scrambler, and he's great at scrambling in scramble drill, and I think that's when he's most comfortable. They don't give him a lot of audibles and checks at the line of scrimmage. Seems like the play that's in is the play that is called. Why would you put a lot on the shoulders of a young quarterback? So I think in order to strip it down, make it rudimentary for him, the offense lacks sophistication, but not because the coaches aren't smart or savvy. I think it lacks sophistication because that would be too much for a young quarterback to process. So they strip it down, make it easy on them. But that also, in my opinion, that's why their running game is in decline. It's not enough creativity and innovation, not enough sophistication, not enough malleability. And that will come with the quarterback being experienced and seasoned enough to see certain defensive fronts, to see certain defensive looks, and be able to get their offense in the right play. Even, Pastor, you remarked about this when we talked about Quinn Ewers and why Sark didn't take Quinn Ewers out. Well, if you're going to run the football, can't Arch just hand it off? Yeah, but Arch may not know how to get him in the right play.
Yeah.
And Quinn might know, let's get in another play. Let's run the counter here, actually, because they left the B gap open. And, you know, Quinn knows that.
Yes.
Young quarterbacks, they may not know that. Marcel Reed doesn't. So a lot of times, you from the snap, because, and I said, maybe they're going to add some different layers to the offense, but from what I've watched, from the snap, that's really where it ends, where all the creativity and innovation ends for A&M. Like, they call the play, and the play is run as called. With Texas, even offensively, you'll see Texas make audibles. You'll see Quinn make a subtle adjustments to the offense, whether that be moving a player to set the pass protection or changing the run concept. We talked about him making an audible to switch to a certain route with DeAndre Moore running the slot fade. You get that with a veteran quarterback. You don't get that with Marcel Reed. That is a severe disadvantage going up against a very experienced and, I think, at times what can be a confusing Texas defensive front. So that's an advantage. This is why the run game for them lately, we're looking at the last two SEC games, been on the road. So I think they'll get a little boost at home, but there's only so much a home field environment can do for you. If you look at yards per design carry for running backs versus Auburn and South Carolina, you're at 3.5 yards per design carry. You really miss Le'Veon Moss because he was a guy that not only could move the chains but also could change the game. And he's been out for you. You only have forced four missed tackles in those last two SEC games on true running back runs. That's not good. And you average 1.8 yards after contact per carry. Also not good. You had two explosive runs in those two games. So in the last two SEC games, the A&M running game is averaging one via traditional running game, handoff to the running back, one explosive play, 1.8 yards after contact per carry, two missed forced tackles per game, and you're at 3.5 yards per design carry. It just lacks explosivity. The run game, the only explosive element of the run game, no BS, is Marcel Reed. It's him. If you corral him, and Texas done a really good job against dual threat quarterbacks. The only dual threat quarterback to really go off on Texas wasn't even true dual threat in my opinion. It was a tendency breaker. It was Dylan Gabriel, who had his career high in rush attempts and in rushing yards versus Texas. And they came into the game thinking he had functional mobility, not that he would be weaponized as a dual threat quarterback. And when he was, it was the difference in them beating Texas. But going into any game when Texas knows they're dealing with a dual threat quarterback, Jalen Milroe, Taylen Green, you know, Diego Pavia, they don't make a lot of plays versus Texas. And I don't think Marcel Reed's going to be any different, especially with his youth and inexperience. Now, here's the thing to watch. With, like I said, the run game now in the last 3 weeks, I think they're averaging 4.1 yards per rush in the last 3 weeks. The running game definitely has, you know, kind of started to decline and fall off a cliff. But if Marcel Reed, when the play breaks down, second reaction plays, off-script plays, improv plays, when the play breaks down and he's able to get outside the pocket and get into the scramble drill, he might be able to make something happen. Remember, Kentucky did that a few times with an inexperienced quarterback, and even with Vandegrift early on. They completed 2 40-plus-yard bombs against Texas. They got 5 20-plus-yard passes completed against the Texas secondary, the most of any team on the season against that Texas defense. They had only allowed 16 passes of 20-plus-yards going into that game, and Kentucky, you know, basically got what they had, the average of what they had been allowing, got like 3 times the average amount of explosive pass plays versus Texas defense than they had been allowing all year in that one game. And Kentucky is not known for an explosive passing game. They're known for an offense that is led by the run, and that they have a run-oriented offensive identity. Well, that's the Aggies, run-oriented offensive identity with better players than Kentucky, with a defensive-minded head coach like Kentucky. That's the only thing that kind of worries me, that Texas did give up some big plays in that Kentucky game. They were irrelevant. They didn't matter in the end. And Texas was able to stonewall them in the red zone, on the goal line, and keep points off the board. But the Aggies will be at home. They'll be on the road. And maybe they saw something they think they can exploit in that Texas defense. Because there ain't much, by the way. I was shocked that Kentucky was able to do it so successfully. All right, there you go. So that's some nuggets about the Texas A&M matchup. Just really quickly, let's talk about the Cowboys. Because there are some injuries to address about the Cowboys Thursday Thanksgiving game, I should say. So Tommy DeVito, you brought this up too, Patrick. Tommy DeVito has a forearm injury, which technically, I mean, I didn't hear much about it yesterday, but now there have been several reports that he has a forearm injury, which could cause the Giants to pivot to Drew Lock for that Thursday game against the Cowboys.
Yeah, and the thought was they didn't go to Drew Lock originally for a couple reasons. One was because they're trying to tank. And they thought that DeVito gave them a better chance to tank. Mm-hmm. And the other is the way Drew Lock's contract is set up. He basically makes more money on every game he plays. So there is apparently another theory about it that they're trying to save some money. It's not enough that a NFL team should be worried about that.
Yeah.
If you are, that's not a great sign for how your team's being run. Because you're talking about a small amount in the grand scheme of things.
Yeah.
So, if you're the Giants in New York City, you shouldn't be worried about the type of money that it would cost. But that's one of the theories, is apparently his contract has a lot, is a super incentive based.
Yeah.
And so that would be one of the reasons why they just put in the guy that it doesn't cost him anything to play, and they're trying to tank. But yeah, that he is apparently iffy on there. And I'm sure Brian Daboll and them, as much as they want to tank, they'd also like to win some games.
Especially this one. Yeah, we win this one, you know, versus the Cowboys. Yeah. Well, I guess both of you guys are going to be drafting closer to the top 10 and in the top 10. So
Not if the Cowboys keep screwing this tank up. We're in the games, man.
You're right. The players aren't tanking. The front office needs to be, but you're right. That's why I would put in Trey Lance. I'd be like, you know what? This is even more reason we need to put in Trey Lance. Because Cooper Rush out there balling. I mean, we said that. It was like Cooper Rush has won games in this league. At least with Trey Lance, you see what you got from him, and I think you would guarantee more of a tank. But good for the Cowboys. They're building character.
Did you also see the big signing that happened? Just broke?
No.
Daniel Jones has picked the team.
Who is it?
Daniel Jones going to Minnesota.
Oh, that makes sense.
Sam Darnold came up a little limpy
in
the last game. I was really hoping that the Jets would cut Aaron Rodgers because there were some rumors about that, and it would be the funniest thing if he went there.
Go to the Jets? Oh, that would be awesome.
If Aaron Rodgers went from the Jets to the Vikings and it's just following Brett Favre's career path completely, I thought that would be quite funny. But
I know, and Aaron Rodgers says he wants to play.
There's rumors of with that Aaron Rodgers basically is refusing to get medical tests because he thinks they're trying to put him on the IR, and the medical test would show he's more hurt than he's saying he is, and it would put him on the IR, which he doesn't want to do, so he's going to play no matter what. It is crazy what they're going through. The Jets are the Jets for
the
a
Jets
reason.
The Jets are the Jets. J-E-T-S, mess is what the Jets are. Oh, man. All right, there you go. The Cowboys also got a lot of guys that are on their injury report. The Cowboys had 16 players on their practice report Monday. They added Kalen Carson as a non-participant Tuesday. The only other change was cornerback Trevon Diggs being downgraded to a non-participant after being estimated as limited on Monday. But tight end Jake Ferguson, Eric Kendricks, Zach Martin, Marshawn Nealon, A'Shem Richards, the tackle, Nick Vigil all remain non-participants. And Deron Bland, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks, Tyler Smith were all limited in practice. So, and full participants, Tyler Guyton ended up being a full participant. Also, Hunter Luepke and Jordan Lewis. Chime Udoga, also full participants. So, Cowboys may be getting some guys back for that game versus the Giants. Who knows? All right, we come back. We'll wrap it up and put it in the oven. And speaking of the oven, getting ready for Thanksgiving holiday, we'll send you off with Who Said That, which is when Patrick plays a piece of audio from the sports world, sometimes beyond the sports world. And based on the context clues or familiarity of the voice, you have to identify and recall who said that. We'll have it right back when we come here on the broadcast featuring Patrick Davis. I'm Lifetime Longhorn. Rod Babers coming back on the horn.
And the blood rises up, and the blood rises up, and the blood rises up, and the blood rises up to the roof. Hit the ground, watch the bodies hit the ground. Part the floor, rock the floor. They don't even know that they're dead.
Welcome back to the Rodcast. Oh, I kind of like that jam. That gets you hyped. That's one of those pregame hype songs, man.
Yeah, it's fun. It's a cult song, like after they're big, like after their prime. So not as many people know it. But it's a great song. It's called G-O-A-T.
Yeah, this would be a great, like, highlight reel song.
Oh, yeah.
For, like, getting hype for the Texas A&M game. He has some highlights in there for the guys. Mac would always do that. He'd play, like, a song, and he'd have, like, a highlight reel that he'd play for the team before games. Good song for that one. Yeah, I like that. It's a hell of a chorus, too.
Yeah, nice. It's the greatest of all time, man. It's a great song. It's a great sports song. It does not get played enough in sports stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, that should be like a kind of a when the intro songs come out, man. Then you play like if you got a goat on your team and the chorus is the greatest of all time. Come on, man.
It's only 8 years old, so it's not that old of a song. Yeah. Most of their stuff is from like early 90s.
I haven't really heard it, so I've never heard that. It's a great song, but I know people who are fans have. But my point is it's not necessarily widespread.
No, it's not, but it's a great one.
That is a good one. All right. Appreciate Patrick. He's at One Artist Wednesday. And The Cult, that group is the focus and feature of One Artist Wednesday. Also, Patrick does a good job with the topic for the Big Fat Poll of the Day. That is posted already at The Horn ATX on X. Simple question. Who will be the MVP for the Texas against A&M? Who will be the MVP of that game? And right now, 45% of you say it's Anthony Hill. Another 33% of you say it's a legacy game for one Quinn Ewers. Go vote on that over at The Horn ATX. X on X. All right, time to play Who Said That. That's when Patrick plays pieces of audio from the sports world, sometimes beyond the sports world, and based on the context clues or familiarity of the voice, you have to identify and recall who said that.
We've felt what it's like to not win this game, and it's bad. It's one of the worst things that's happened to me in my life, you know, quite honestly, other than losing my father and a few other things. Like it's quite honestly for my family the worst thing that's happened. So we can never have that happen.
That is Ryan Day, who's comparing his losses to Michigan as some of the worst things ever happened in his life, and then brings up the death of his father.
Yeah, no, it's up there. You know, it's up there. Death of my father, couple other things, losing to Michigan. Wow.
I guess you don't need to question whether he cares or not.
I think he cares.
Good Lord.
I think he cares.
The man is comparing losing to Michigan to the death of his father. I'm hoping the man beats Michigan. If he'll be Michigan this year at home, when this is the worst Michigan team we've seen in what, since pre-Harbaugh, that's gonna be a problem.
Go blue.
the man just admitted that this compares to the death of his father. You're talking about you hope that he feels that kind of anguish and pain.
Yeah, I don't have much love for Ohio State.
I can see that. All right, thank you, brother. We got a lot of love for you. Thanks for everything you do, Patrick. And have a great Thanksgiving holiday,
sir.
Brother. Happy Thanksgiving to you. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you guys. Remember, the revolution will not be televised, but we'll be talking about it right here on the Rodcast. We love you guys. We mean that. Take care of yourselves, but more importantly, take care of each other. Happy Thanksgiving. And I don't even know what we say about the Aggies. The Aggies suck, just like OU sucks. They all do. All right, until next time, hook 'em and peace.
ready for the next episode. Hey.